Gav's Goodens with Gavin Andrew on Vitalize Radio.
Griff Parry, are you there on line two?
I am, yes. Hi, Gavin. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And you?
Yes, excellent, thank you. It's been a lovely Easter Sunday, hasn't it, for everyone? So hope you all had a lovely day out in the sun, and looking forward to chatting with you today.
Oh, excellent. I mean, what a great way to finish your day, chatting with me. So, let's start with Easter Sunday. First of all, the weather was supposed to be not brilliant, but actually it's been really nice. But I don't want to talk about the weather, because that's really boring. I want to know how many Easter eggs you had.
Do you know what? I hate to be really, really boring, but, and all my colleagues in school actually know this, but I don't like chocolate. I know I tend to get, a lot of criticism for this, and people are completely unaware of how this could be the case, but I don't like chocolate whatsoever. I don't eat cakes or biscuits or anything like that, so but it explains why I'm so thin, I think, in general.
Anyway, thanks for the chat, Griff, and yeah, let's go to line three. Only joking. Or am I? Anyway, you don't like chocolate?
Do you know what? It's it is a very strange one. There's lots of other things I like to do, but it's not a joke. I don't like chocolate. I just don't have a very sweet tooth, in all honesty. So it's a very peculiar one. I know a lot of people take a lot of time adjusting to that, but no, it's probably a great benefit to me anyway, based on health. So
okay,
no, absolutely.
So for Easter, what kind of presents do you get, or do you not get anything?
Do you know what? I'm so extremely busy at the moment. I seem to be completely focused on work, whether it be the campaign or speaking to local people or meeting with family. Actually, we did have the family over today, which was lovely. Getting to speak to lots of people I haven't seen in a long, long time, which was great to see. And so it was lovely just to have see different faces again and to have a chat about how people have been getting on. So that was really, really lovely to see.
Okay, I notice you avoided the question there. So as a child, did you get Easter eggs or did you get something else?
Do you know what? I did let you into a bit of a secret. When I was a child, I think this is why I don't like sweets or chocolates anymore, because when I was young, I used to constantly go to Woolworths. I mean, that shows you how long ago it was, wasn't it? But I used to go to Woolworths and I used to be obsessed with, sweets, chocolates. I'd drink Coke, anything. I just have everything I could get my hands on, really. It was like being in a perfect situation for me in a sweet shop. So I used to nag my parents to constantly get that if I behaved well. So it's certainly something which I've grown less fond of down the years.
Okay. And to be fair, Woolworths Pick a Mix was pretty amazing, wasn't it?
Do you know what? Do you remember having the little milk bottles, how fantastic they were?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We're going to be very I can't even say it. I won't even bother. Let's move on. Let me just ask. You said about being in school. So
yes.
How old are you?
So I'm 28 years old.
Okay. So what do you do in school?
So I'm currently a secondary school teacher in one of the local Torvine comprehensives. I have spoken, and it's not. I think it's in terms of political. Political life, it's important that we keep these things relatively without actually mentioning the names. But I teach Welsh in a local school, and I've been doing so for a while now, very much enjoying it. It's not the first school I've worked at, it's actually the second school in Torvine that I've had the pleasure of working in, and so it's great. And I'm very much enjoying the challenge of now getting back from COVID world and getting used to welcoming the kids back to school, which is what we all want to see.
Absolutely, yeah, we need more normal life, really, don't we? I think.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, so if I'd known you'd spoken Welsh, then you could have spoken to Jessie as well, because we have a Welsh show just before mine. Anyway,
oh, okay.
Let's move on. So. Obviously, we know you're a teacher, but we're not going to talk about that, and that's not why we're here. We know you don't like chocolate. I can't quite get over that, so we're just going to move on from that as well. Tell me, Griff, who are you?
So, those of you who haven't heard about what I'm doing yet, I'm 28 years old, as you will have just heard. I'm a speaker, or I'm brought up bilingually. I speak six languages. I'm currently teaching in a local comprehensive school in Torvine. I was brought up in Ebwy Vale. I lived in Abergavenny for a while, and then I also went to school in Ysgolion Gwynllŷ, which is the whole Welsh component. Studied there. I think I did my A levels there as well. I then, once I left school, I then went to England to do a degree in French and Spanish, which was a fantastic opportunity. Managed to go abroad and profited from that experience greatly in terms of meeting new people and really getting a better view of the world, and it was a fantastic experience. I then was lucky enough to get the chance to work as a political researcher in Westminster, which was, again, an unforgettable experience there. Extremely demanding at the same time, I might add. I then subsequently went to work in the European Union, which is very much informed with my politics to a certain degree. And I was very fortunate again there to work there in political research. Then, after all that, it's no surprise that I decided to do something slightly different, because it was a very all-consuming time in my life, and I went into teaching, which I'm thoroughly enjoying at the moment, and I've worked in three schools already, which is have all been fantastic in their own right, and I've very much enjoyed working with the pupils, and as a result, now I'm very looking forward to standing as a candidate for the first time in Torrevieja, an area I'm extremely passionate about, and very much looking forward to explaining what I have to offer today.
Okay, right. So what I'm going to say, I've had a message from one of my listeners asking me to ask you, and I will, if you could just slow down just a little bit.
Okay, no problem at all.
Okay, I think you're getting very excited, and yeah, we just need to speak. It'd be all right if we were face to face, but because we're over the radio, I think it's a little bit harder for people to keep up. Let's go back just quickly. You said you spoke six languages, so I've picked up on Welsh, English, French, Spanish. What are the other two?
I also speak Portuguese and Italian as well. So I've lived in Portugal and also I've actually lived in lots of different European countries. So Spain, France, Portugal, and Italy as well. So I actually taught a lot of English in those countries. I should have mentioned that. And I had a great deal of experience of working abroad in those countries, which is something I thoroughly enjoyed, and it certainly, as I said before, gave me a great deal of experience of working with different people and in different organisations, and it's something which I would like to do again at some point, really. But at the moment, I'm extremely busy with teaching here. So,
absolutely. Okay. So you said you are standing.
Yes.
What are you standing for?
So I'm standing as the Welsh Conservative candidate in the forthcoming Welsh parliamentary elections in May. I know it sounds, it seems to me like it's been going on for a long time now, but like I said, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, I'm standing as the candidate, really, for ambitious, kind of re-energised and prosperous Torrevieja. It's an area that, I've got lots to say on numerous policy aspects, which I'd really like to discuss with you today. And it's something that I feel that, given the chance, we can really make a difference with a new re-energised candidate who is willing to transform the fortunes of Torrevieja. And it's something which, given my experience as a teacher, education, for example, would be number one on the priority list, both in terms of academic study and also vocational study. I've got lots of members of the family who work in health as well, and so health is an extremely fundamental aspect of that as well, and it's something which I believe we need to focus on in terms of key health provision, aligning not only physical health but also mental health. I also would like to stress in more detail the importance of harnessing business growth and attracting inward investment, private sector investment through, by way of supporting our tourism economy, particularly in relation to the use of the Monmouthshire-Brecon Canal route, which is something I'd like to come on to. And finally, really, it's I think, Gavin, I think you've been very kind enough to explain that we're going to discuss the Greenbelt site as well. And that's something which the public have been so kind to me on in terms of giving me an opportunity to get involved in that campaign, and they've done fantastically well in terms of really highlighting the concerns that we all have and that we all share as a borough, I would say, not just individuals. And I think for us, it's really a case of doing all we can now to improve public consultation, to increase knowledge of the proposed LDP, the local development plan, across all the different sites, and to ultimately make sure that Torrevieja County Borough Council does indeed listen to the concerns of the residents, including the 900 who signed the petition.
Yeah. Right. So, sorry, I was listening to all of that, and so what I was going to say was, what are your priorities? But I think you just covered that.
I'm more than happy to explain them to you and to listeners if you like in greater detail.
Okay. So let's go back through those priorities a little bit slower, and at the same time, let's ask, what would these priorities basically achieve for the people of Torfine? Or Torfine. I like how you say that. You say it properly.
Oh, I know, it certainly sounds slightly better, doesn't it, in Welsh, but in Torfine, I suppose. But I think first and foremost, if you look at education, we've currently got a crisis at the moment in terms of academic achievement, kind of general per pupil spending, and also teacher recruitment. Now, at present, if you look at the, for example, the PISA rankings, both in terms of science, maths, and reading, and also our reading, where we've got, 1 in 10 of our students, unfortunately, in education, that have a reading ability which is less than average. Our PISA rankings are the lowest in the whole of the UK in those aspects. Now, that's a totally unsustainable position for a country like Wales.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm going to stop you there. I don't know if you're aware, but I was a teacher for a long time.
Yes.
So I know with what you're talking about, but I'm thinking that the people at home that may be listening right now, they're going to be thinking, why is he talking about pizza?
It's a very lovely food.
Can you explain that to me?
So it's essentially the ranking. So if we look at the actual league tables in terms of the different varying aspects of performance based on the varying subjects, it's an area where these particular areas, science, maths, and reading, have been neglected systemically, and it's an issue that we need to improve in terms of our overall performance of students across these areas, just essentially to make sure that these kids are getting the best academic provision, that their needs are being adhered to, and that ultimately we're in a great position to be able to ensure that moving forward they're getting the best teaching possible so that they can leave with the best quality of education and qualifications.
Brilliant. Okay. So education is definitely a massive thing.
Yes, I mean, it's also, we've also got a situation where we, you know, and I think you would agree, Gavin, you know, state of the art, both myself being a secondary school teacher and yourself having worked as a primary school teacher, I think we both agree, and many other listeners would also concur, that we need state of the art facilities offering high tech learning to all students, irrespective of a background, because ultimately we need students in areas, you know, such as Torfine and Blaen y Gwent and other areas which don't necessarily have the same levels of, you know, necessarily have the same levels of prosperity. We need to ensure that we have those state-of-the-art learning facilities. And in Wales, you know, we need an extra 120 million worth of funding by the end of 2021 in order to make this happen, you know, and with per pupil funding down, you know, by almost 8%, in Wales, which equates to, you know, £200 per pupil less than in England, and a staggering £800 less than in Scotland, that's per pupil. Imagine the kind of input we can have if we started to readdress those the imbalance there in terms of per pupil funding, and how that could impact on each student's prospective qualifications moving forward. So that's something I'm certainly extremely passionate about, and I think we need to really prioritise that.
So I think state of the art equipment would be really, really important. What about training the teachers to be able to use it, though?
I think that's a fantastic point. I think, and I mean, I certainly, myself as a teacher now, and all my colleagues, when we attended our LLCs, our teacher training days, We all said the same thing, you know, we felt we've upskilled massively since the start of the pandemic. There haven't been very many positive things, if any at all, to report over the course of the last year. It's, you know, to the extent where I almost certainly have lost track of time. I don't know about you, Gavin, but I certainly have. And it's a situation where absolutely, you know, we do need to make sure that we are upskilling our teachers. But I, for one, you know, I've learned how to use Google Teams properly and how to record things on YouTube and then transfer them over to the students so that they can learn remotely. I've also been able to, we've used, you know, breakout rooms so that they can improve their speaking, you know, ability in Welsh. That's the kind of thing I suppose I'd refer to.
Yeah, no, and you are spot on with that, actually, to be fair, because before COVID struck, I wasn't able to use Microsoft Teams or Zoom or anything like that in the degree that I can now.
No, so, absolutely.
Yeah, 100%, I agree with that. Okay, so education is a massive part of this campaign. Tell me the next thing.
So health is another extremely important aspect, which I think, you know, ultimately needs just as much attention. I've got numerous family members who work in the health service, both in terms of, you know, I've got GPs, I've got, you know, doctors, consultants, and also nurses. And, you know, one of the things we really need to, I think, focus on is the different aspects. So first of all is the waiting times in numerous areas, and also to look at the waste that we're actually, you know, that's actually been incurred at the moment in the health service. So if I tell you, for example, if you look at A&E, the targets at the moment are that we've got a 95% target for waiting less than 4 hours in A&E. Unfortunately, that's never been met. Our cancer waiting times haven't been met since 2008. Ambulance waiting times, for example, in terms of red call response responses, you know, have not been met since, you know, 2019, the winter of 2019. When you think that's an 8 minute, you know, minimum or maximum waiting time in a red call, you know, area, that's extremely important. That can make the difference between life and death in certain cases. And that's the kind of thing we really need to be focusing on to really, you know, ensure that our targets are being met, and ultimately to argue these things, you know, to say, look, these things aren't being achieved. How can we ensure that there is provision in place, both in terms of funding and to ensure that these targets are, you know, ministers are accountable for such things? If we look at the waste, for example, I mean, we've got an example of, you know, £265 million recently from 2016 to 2020 being paid out in negligence fees across six NHS health boards. I mean, that's completely unforgivable at this current day and age. We've got £500 million being spent on agency fees alone, you know, to replace some of the members of staff who, for whatever reason, aren't able to attend. I mean, this is something which we really need to look at in terms of how we can improve the overall, you know, clinical care for patients. But what I would also say is how we can look to realign mental health provision and physical health provision. It's an issue I'm extremely passionate about, and I think for far too long now, mental health sufferers have been ignored. It's kind of been the, you know, they've had this silent voice, haven't they? They've not been represented, and it's about time now that we start giving them the same due care and attention that the others have, you know, have absolutely rightly received.
Okay. And that's, so let's just go back over a few things there. So you, I agree that actually waiting hours of 4 hours, and obviously the cancer waiting times are extremely behind. I mean, that's obviously horrendous, isn't it? But can I just clarify for everybody listening that we're not bashing the NHS, because I think they do a fantastic job.
Absolutely.
How are they going to achieve these faster waiting times, if you like?
What we need is, first of all, we need more accountability. So I think it really boils down to a position where we need, you know, we are more efficient NHS health boards. We need them to be accountable. We need to ensure that, you know, ultimately, of course, as you rightly say there are so many doctors, nurses, you know, clinical staff all across Wales who have done a fantastic job throughout, particularly in certain times of such, you know, need at the moment, and we do absolutely owe them you know, owe them all our gratitude for that. However, and it's not them that are the ones that are responsible, it's politicians ultimately who need to be accountable now. And it's not a case, as you point out, it's not a case of pointing the finger at anyone, but it's, or any political party, but we need to ensure now that in the Senate, that those responsible for such decisions are accountable for them. They consult with the NHS health boards that they are directly in contact with, and that they speak to doctors, nurses and clinical health practitioners to absolutely undertake to ensure that these people are consulted. It's the same issue, which I'm sure we'll come on to very soon, Gavin, on the green belt, but it's an issue where, you know, people feel that they're not consulted with. They feel that ultimately there's this kind of us and them approach where the people on the front line, whether it be the doctors, the nurses who attend work unfailingly every day and undertake to improve their lives and to care for their patients, whether it be people, local people in Torvine who feel that ultimately, you know, their green belt areas are being bulldozed over without any care, consultation or you know, any sort of provision in place to ensure that their needs are being met. And it does, for me, feel, as someone who's looking in on these matters, that ultimately they're absolutely right to have these concerns and that we need to address them head on if we are to move forward transparently, Gavin, and that's what I would like to discuss.
Okay. So, education, health board, what's next?
So another aspect for me, and I think this is, we've discussed two issues which are very kind of general national issues, which I don't think anybody would dispute are extremely important. However, one more local issue, which I really like to focus on, is I believe that, and it does kind of, it encompasses the whole issue around people who suffered throughout this pandemic, is financially. And I think council tax, for example, is a really important issue at the moment. It's an issue where people have been hit hardest by this pandemic, either, you know, by having lost, you know, either lost some of their wages or they've been made redundant or they've, you know, lost employment for whatever reason, or, for example, they've been forced to get on a 0 hours contract job. That, of course, for some students can be a positive thing, but also to many people it can be something which is extremely detrimental to their overall, not just in terms of their pockets, which of course is important to all of us, but to their mental health and well-being as well, which is, I've already discussed. Our plan, what I would like to see happen at the moment, is to prioritise the elderly, prioritise those who work tirelessly to support their families during this enormous health crisis, and essentially to freeze council tax for 2 years. Now, this will cost us around 80-90 million pounds. Those are the estimations which we have, we're in the process of calculating now. But this is something which ultimately, you know, I think a lot of people would be happier to actually pay back in tax if we were able to, and people would be happy to do that if we were able to give, you know, people who deserve it a well-deserved council tax break at this time, rather than hitting them right where it hurts at a time of need.
Okay. Is that going to be manageable? Is that going to be able to happen?
It's something I'd certainly like to do. I've spoken to a great number of people about this. I mean, one of the things I think is vitally important, I've consulted with both members of my party. I've spoken to members of other parties as well about this in terms of general consultation. I've also spoken, but primarily, I've spoken to lots of people in lots of local people. I believe it's really important to, as a political representative or as someone who is a prospective candidate for a region or a seat, you know, to pick up the phone, to engage with local people, to engage via messenger or pick up the phone and talk to them and to ask them what their concerns are. And a lot of these people have said to me that there will be stumbling blocks. There will be areas where, you know, can we afford this 10 million or that 20 or here and there? But ultimately, people are concerned about council tax, and it's an issue which is not just specific to Torvine, but also an area which many people across the Welsh Valleys are extremely concerned about. I've got family, for example, in Blaen y Gwent. I've also got family in the Canal Valley, in Aberdeen, in the Merthyr area, and people say exactly the same thing to me there. And I do believe it's something which is realistic and that people would be happy to pay back with in the future if we were able to make that kind of provision now.
So, just to clarify, so you're saying to have like a kind of freeze now, but then pay it back in the future?
Absolutely, yes. If we could, you know, but I think ultimately as well, making sure that we freeze council tax for people to enable them right now to get the, you know, those who would directly need it, those people who are have suffered, you know, difficult times throughout this pandemic, to get a well-deserved break now, you know, which we can look at in the future how we can get that money back. But at the moment, I think it's absolutely something which we should be prioritising, yes.
How do you see it being manageable in the future if people are struggling to manage with it now?
Personally, I would like to see, and I think it's an excellent question. I mean, I think if you were able for temporarily, you know, to increase the tax bracket. I think actually certain people to bear the brunt of that, and people who can manage better to pay a little bit more in the future just to be able to actually fund that. I think that's something which I would certainly like to see, because I think ultimately it's unsustainable to expect people, you know, on the lower end of the tax bracket, people who are suffering at the moment, great financial hardship, to be expected to deal with that. And like I said, the estimated cost is between £80-90 million. And I do think, and you know, there is money available. It's just a case of making sure that we, you know, divide this money up fairly and ensure that people are paying their fair share. I don't think many people would necessarily dispute that. If it were, you know, if you look, for example, at the support that the UK government has made, £6 billion worth of funds actually to the Welsh government, in terms of, you know, through the COVID crisis to support businesses and to, you know, sustain employment. I think that's the kind of thing which people are happy to pay back and are happy to do their fair share of, to support, provided that they can see that, you know, these causes are genuine causes which support people in need. Yeah.
Okay. Right. What we're going to do, I'm going to give you time to get a glass of water, and I'm going to just do the same myself. I'm going to put a little track on, and then I'm going to come back to you. Is that all right?
Absolutely. Thank you, Gavin. Cheers.
All right. We're going to go with Mr. President. This is Coco Jumbo. Yeah, 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 Coco Jumbo.
Yeah, yeah. Gav's Goodens with Gavin Andrew on Vitalize Radio. This is your number one community radio station, Vitalize Radio. We lead, others follow.
Absolutely. We lead and others follow. Torvine's only community radio station right here from the heart of Torvine. I am Gavin Andrew and you're listening to Gav's Goodens. And at the moment, currently on line two, we have Griff Parry and we're chatting with him about his forthcoming campaign. So if you haven't listened, guys, you've missed out. But we're going to cross back over to line two now and chat with him about business and tourism, and we need to talk about the green belt and those green fields. So Griff, are you still there?
I am, yes. Gavin, how are you?
Phew, I'm okay. Are you surviving?
I am, yes, thank you. I'm very much enjoying the chat, so it's lovely to be on. And again, thank you so much for inviting me on to discuss this with yourself and with the public.
No problem at all. And I do think that it would be beneficial for yourself and others, actually, if you were to come back. So we'll maybe try and make another date, maybe before your campaign, so that we can hear some more of your views.
100%, yes. Okay.
Let's go on then to business and tourism.
Yes, thank you. So, I mean, one of the things which I would very much like to see is the, you know, prioritising business. I feel that what we need is, particularly in the towns, you know, in the towns of Torvine, we need to have a clear approach now to where we can improve the general prosperity and aspirational nature of these towns. And I think business infrastructure and prioritising business is an extremely important device to ensure that happens. So, for example, what I would like to see is a regenerational approach to our towns. Now, in terms of the specific proposals here, I'd really like to see us, you know, cutting business rates for small startup enterprises, and to also reduce the rents on these local small town businesses, you know, in order to allow small businesses and attract business growth in the area. I'd also like to see the repurposing of buildings, because, and it's an issue which we'll come on to now, I'm sure, but it's particularly in reference to the Greenbelt sites. But it's one where we've got, you know, we need to make sure that we're making use of the spaces, the derelict buildings, the unused buildings, the abandoned buildings which used to be shops or used to represent other institutions in the area, and allow those and repurpose these buildings, either for, you know, for accommodation purposes, which we'll come on to in a second, but also to, you know, to allow these new businesses to start up. I think it's also really important that if you look at some other areas, you know, the likes of the Crickhowels and the Abergavennies and the Cowbridges, for example, of, you know, of Wales, you know, there's no reason why places like, with a natural beauty and with, you know, with all the beautiful areas we have going on, particularly in Cwmbran and Pontypool, that we look at how we can, you know, ensure that we improve these kind of niche, and we really promote these niche businesses that offer certain products which aren't necessarily available to people in the wider retailers, in the larger retailers, that you can't find anywhere. I mean, these are the kind of boutique style shops which I'd really like to see promoted. And it's really vital, you know, that people would say to me, well, how do we do that? You know, how do we get these things? How do we fund it? How do we make use of these things? And there are certain initiatives available. For example, you know, we've got the Community Renewal Fund, which is a £200 million fund introduced by the UK government to both sustain jobs and to also harness business growth prior to the introduction of the Shared Prosperity Fund, which, of course, is, and I'm sure the 60% of people in Tour Divine who voted Leave would like to hear that it'll basically be funded by to the tune of £14.4 billion, which will no longer pay, which will actually recoup and use to spend by no longer paying into the UK, the EU budget, which is something which I'm certainly an advocate of. We've also got the Levelling Up Fund, you know, which is there for the same purposes, you know, for community regenerational projects, to enhance transport infrastructure and to create, you know, bus and rail interconnectivity. So to really enhance that aspect of it as well. And I think we also need to look at things as a business. A lot of people will, you know, have discussed to me whether they're concerned about the city deal. And they said, look, the city deal, which is, you know, a £500 million worth fund by the Capital City Regional Investment Fund, which is there to essentially to promote the digital and physical connectivity. I think what we need to look at is this £120 million worth there of money which goes into that city deal to fund it. And that £120 million is spent, actually, or is there, or raised by actually the 10 Welsh local authorities having to pay £12 million each into the funds. That would be £12 million for Tor Divine. Now, if we're paying £12 million into something like that, what are we getting back? Are we getting any more than just £1.5 million, you know, incomplete Pontypool, you know, Pontypool railway station, which doesn't have, you know, the basic toilet facilities? I mean, are these the kind of things we need to be prioritising? Or should we be looking to actually improve the transport infrastructure in general around the communities, so elderly people who need to commute can travel better and cheaper via bus, you know, via transport, in local services, but also to make sure that we encourage people to spend in Tor Divine, to try and get jobs in Tor Divine rather than being dormitories for these larger cities.
Okay, but that money, has it got to come from somewhere?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch your question there, sorry.
So, the money, obviously you said that £12 million, Tor Divine paid £12 million in.
Yeah.
Okay, if we're not getting it back, then that means it's going somewhere else.
Yeah.
So, would that mean that we'd have to pay more money in to get more money back? Or to get something back?
Well, the way it works is, with this system, we would have to pay generally £120 million. So, you know, in general, the 10 Welsh authorities would have to pay £12 million each into that. So that's just a minimum expenditure that we have to, as an area, as a county borough, pay in to sustain that project. We don't necessarily, you know, that's not money which is necessarily being recouped. Okay. It's just money which we have to pay into the system. And I think what a lot of people would say is, you know, if we're putting £12 million and if, you know, the 10 Welsh areas are paying, you know, local authorities are paying £12 million each year, and I can't speak for any other areas, of course, because I'm representing Tor Divine. Yep. But if we're paying £12 million in Tor Divine, and that's taxpayers' money, which is going to fund an area in the city, at the city deal, which actually is already, in Cardiff, for example, is an area which is already, I would say, better funded than some of the Welsh valleys, better funded and receives more than some areas such as Tor Divine, I would ask, you know, is it sustainable? Is it something which really, realistically, we would like to keep doing moving forward? Is it fair? And if we're going to pay this £12 million as a county borough, how are we going to get this money back? And that's what I'd really like to see. And what sort of, you know, infrastructure projects, what sort of regenerational projects can we get in return? And my view is, if we're not getting that back, we should look actually to say, hang on a minute, we're better off spending this money, or actually looking at ways to make sure that people are spending the money, that we train and upskill our young people. There's more vocational study here in Tor Divine so that people can live, spend, and seek employment in the area.
Which would be highly beneficial, wouldn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Where does the money go now?
So the money basically goes in. It's the £500 million is a joint UK government and Welsh government, I shouldn't make it anymore, should I? Welsh Parliamentary, the Welsh Parliament. So it goes into both of those institutions. And that's what, so it's a £500 million, but obviously the 120 of it goes in that way. So 120 of that goes to them from the 10 local authorities. So 12 million of that, of course, would become straight from Torvine. And I think for me, like I said, it would be a case of saying, well, you know, hang on a minute. Is that money, is that £12 million going where it should be, I suppose?
Okay. So that's good to know, to be fair, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
And I think it's important to know as well, because obviously if we as Torvine are giving so much money away, we kind of want to know where it's going.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if you are Torvine County Borough Council, you know, I think what we people would like to see is, particularly in terms of, again, it's I keep referring to this, Gavin. I'm tempting you, aren't I, to discuss the Greenfield site. But it's again, a case of transparency, isn't it? People want to know, for example, if houses are being built, you know, what exactly how many people are on that housing list? And actually, how many people are in direct need and are in a high, you know, degree of need for that housing? Are the right people getting, you know, the housing that they need, or is it just general stats which don't necessarily, you know, best represent our needs as local people? And it's the same with the funding, isn't it? It's having that transparency in it, and it's looking at it. That the whole thing which underpins the policy is, what should underpin the policy, is, you know, have we fully accounted for this money, you know, and is this money being spent correctly? And if it's not, how can we ensure that it is, I suppose?
Okay, so let's talk about that money. Just one more question for you about that.
Yes.
Because then we're going to have no more teasing. We're going to move on. The question is, okay, it's a good question. Who oversees that money at the moment?
So do you mean in terms of the money that gets given, the £12 million, where does it go to?
Yeah, so I guess what I'm trying to ask is, yeah, how is that going to change? How can that change? Who is overseeing that at the moment? Can the person be influenced, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, so in terms of, I think there's two components to this, aren't there? I mean, the first would be, if we start on a more local level, it would be, you know, us ensuring that the money that goes from Torvine County Borough Council, to look at it and to say, right, how, you know, is it, like I said, is the city deal worth it? And as the person in charge of that, you know, of the economic issues in that organisation, to think, is that something which we really should be prioritising? And then looking at, actually, like I said, if it's not worth our money, and making the relevant calculations, if the money isn't being best spent, how can we ensure that it is, and what else can we do instead? And then in terms of the Welsh Assembly government, the Senedd government, sorry, we should be looking at thinking, well, actually, that money there, you know, they really need to understand the needs, you know, especially in a time where certain councils are, you know, are hard up for money, you know. Not all councils. Torvine, for example, is not a highly funded council. And people need to be thinking, actually, you know, can we afford to be spending this money? Is this project fair on those who are underrepresented or underfunded? Is this something which actually people should be paying? Or could we look at a system whereby certain areas, rather than having all 10 local authorities paying £12 million each, could certain areas which benefit more, or that are, you know, naturally more wealthy areas, could they make a greater contribution to the overall system, which will be more, you know, more kind of balanced approach to ensure that we look at this based on capital, you know, per member of population, the amount of funding, the amount of unemployment in an area, the amount of prosperity in an area, just to level up, really, and to make sure that people are getting their fair share and that their money is making a difference, I suppose.
And that is actually what everybody wants, isn't it, to be fair?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, right, Griff, no more teasing. I want to talk about this green.
Yes.
Hang on, can I just clarify? The green fields.
Yes.
Okay, what do you want to talk about this? What do you know?
So it's, first of all, I'd like to say thank you for, this is the most important issue, really, and I think this is one where I'd like to thank you for, you know, having me on to speak about this, because it's something that myself and a great many members of the public who've been kind enough to kind of allow me into the group. There are certain groups on Facebook, for example, and certain many individuals who fought long and hard to try and make representations to Torvine County Borough Council about this, and to try and make our voices heard as individuals. You know, I'd like to thank, for example, Hannah Bateman from the Circusfield Group, who's the founder of that group. I'd like to also thank people like Hayley King, Amy Bubella, Elizabeth P, Tim Rees, people like that who are also part of the Circusfield group, the Llanfairpwll group, which is in, you know, in relation to the strategic site there, which we'll come on to in a second. But there's also lots of other people as well, people like Lynn Blake, people like Jane Parfitt, Grant Ducroix, people like that who I've been in touch with quite frequently about this issue, and they have made representations to me about how we can improve this. And I think ultimately, if you look at the Craigavelin site, so the site in Croeso Ceiliog, it's unbelievable that this proposal hasn't been already dropped. I mean, we were fortunate enough to have a Zoom meeting with Laura Ann Jones, who's currently the regionalist member from the Conservative Party on the South East Wales list, and we also had many other, you know, politicians from the party, as well as there was a member of the Labour Party there as well, Catherine Mabby. David Davis attended, and the general consensus there was that how it can potentially go forward. I mean, Laura Ann Jones actually took it upon herself to ask and to represent us in the Senate with a question. And what we found out was that actually, in this particular case, this site did not meet the impact and sustainability assessment in a number of different ways: biodiversity, flooding, health, pollution, all these different areas, housing, And the Julie James, the local housing and environment minister for the Labour Party in the Senate, stated that according to the Future of Wales framework, that every current and future LDP instigated or initiated by a County Borough Council has to be in accordance with that criteria. So any LDP which doesn't meet those sustainability assessments can't actually go forward. So it's a complete contravention of those things. It also completely disregards, for example, issues like climate change impacts, you know, protection of urban rural settings, and these kind of things, and also the importance of building on brownfield sites as opposed to greenfield sites, which of course we understand that is more costly in terms of decontaminating the site, but ultimately it shouldn't be about cost here. It's about making sure that people, the local people, are consulted, which they haven't been, that public awareness is there, so that those people are able to have a say, are able to challenge this LDP in the most transparent, vigorous way, which in all fairness people have done to the best of their ability.
But do you think that people have lost faith when it comes to greenfields? Because obviously the site down the bottom now, that's obviously not far off finishing, there was a massive, massive petition on that. You know, people didn't want that to go ahead. It went ahead. You made a point earlier when we were talking about business and tourism about derelict places and buildings that weren't used anymore that could be repurposed. You know, why don't we do that? Why? One of the things that I absolutely loved about Torvine when I moved here was actually all the beautiful scenery, those green fields that we're talking about, and more than that, obviously the biodiversity, the wildlife, everything. It was amazing. But do we care?
I completely agree with you, and that's the tragedy of it, isn't it, as well? You know, we've got the lack of public consultation, the lack of transparency, which is a fundamental problem, got huge issues in terms of the current LDP and the LDP in its current form. But also, you know, I think what people feel, and they're absolutely right to think this, is that, you know, what consideration is being given, you know, to champion the environment in terms of, it seems that that's all we're looking to do in a Torvine County Borough Council is just to, from my perspective and the perspective of other people, is just to roll over and grant the developers permissions to, you know, cause scarring of land, which is, you know, aesthetically pleasing, which has been there, which, you know, and it's not just the case, and it's been there for, you know, it's been the kind of the foundation of Torvine. Torvine is a beautiful natural area, boasts huge amount of scenic, you know, splendid, picturesque land, and ultimately, we don't want to change that. We need to be proud of what we've got, and I think what we're extremely concerned about is also the lack of transparency in terms of, first of all, mental health provision. I mean, we talk about gentrifying and bringing people into the area and attracting people from outside into the area, but there'd be no thought process in that, from my mind, in that regard, because if you want to attract, you know, young families or people from other areas to come to an area where their greenfield sites have been ripped up, I mean, where are their children going to play? As a teacher, for example, I'm extremely, you know, pro and concerned with improving the lives and the mental health and well-being of our future generation. And I think ultimately, those people's concerns need to be looked at as well. Mental health is an extremely important area, not just in terms of health provision, which I've already already discussed, but in terms of, particularly in this such unprecedented, you know, uncertain times for everyone, you know, young people need to have their time, you know, they need to be young, they need to play, they need to be out, and that's something which I would like to bring up with the Children's Commissioner, so, and I'm in the process.
I absolutely agree with you on that, to be fair. I do think children should be kept young, children need to play, children need to get out, children need to explore, yeah? For anybody that's just tuned in and missed the first part, can you just clarify for me, was it the Welsh Conservative? What is your aim? What do you want to do?
In this particular instance, on the circus fields or in general?
No, just in general for a sec.
So in this particular instance, I think what's really important, first of all, I mean, it's an extremely complicated issue in the sense that we've got, you know, a Torbern County Borough Council, which doesn't...
What are you aiming to do? What's your priority at the moment? You want to be Welsh Conservative leader, is that right?
Oh, right. Sorry, I misunderstood. I thought you were referring to the LDP. Sorry.
No.
In terms of my what I would like to see for Torrevine, so I'm standing as the Welsh Conservative Senate candidate for May's elections, and I'm just currently in the process of discussing my priorities, which are education, health, business, tourism, and also preserving our green area, really.
Okay. And, yeah, I think you've made some absolutely amazing points, to be fair. With regards to councillors, though, isn't any opportunity a money opportunity?
I couldn't agree more, and I think that's the travesty here. It's, you know, it is. At what point do you sit there and say, you know, we can't constantly prioritise profit over people's mental health and well-being? We can't continue to prioritise profit over, you know, over beautiful local you know, kind of undisturbed land, which should stay like that. I mean, it's land which is fundamental to the area. It's you know, we boast so many beautiful scenic areas in Torrevine, which, you know, are just being running the risk at the moment purely as a result of these very reckless and ill-considered proposals, in my opinion. And again, it's just, as you rightly point out, and I couldn't agree more with you, Gavin, it's a case of prioritising these developers, prioritising funds and a way to make a quick bucks, really, over you know, and also education provision. I mean, you know, we talk about the housing list, for example. Me as a teacher, you know, I can absolutely say to you, and you as a primary school teacher as well, would understand this. You know, it's, if we get more housing, it's the basic numeracy which I don't understand. Of course, we don't agree with the LDP itself for the reasons I previously outlined, but it's also a case of, if we're going to get more people in, you know, it's, first of all, our priority is to make sure that local people can live and stay in the area, that there are jobs there for local people who've been, you know, brought up in the area, who've gone to school here, who've got young families here, and those people should not be priced out of an area where the greenfield site's been ripped up for housing, when the housing that's being proposed to, you know, for people to live in is, you know, ridiculously expensive. For example, I did a bit of research. And in Pontrydderin, for example, some of the cheapest house prices there were about £450,000. Yeah. I mean, is that realistic for a young couple from Torrevine who haven't had necessarily the benefits of, you know, of other people from other areas, in the area which, unfortunately, suffers, as I've already said, you know, for lack of jobs, lack of vocational options? We had Pontypool College shut, unfortunately, last year, which would have enabled our young people to train as manufacturers in an area which boasts one of the highest level of manufacturing, not just in Wales, but the whole of the UK, people to train as electricians, as engineers, for example. This is the kind of lack of foresight which is, unfortunately, you know, forms part of the kind of this kind of stagnation, this lack of foresight, this lack of priority for the area, which I think TCBC has a lot to answer for. And in terms of the local people, they've been fantastic in taking this forward. The people I've mentioned already, and a great deal others, I'd like to mention and pay tribute to the 100 or so people, I think it was, that attended the Zoom meeting, you know, about a month ago, and made some, you know, some really heartfelt cases to, you know, two people there. We've subsequently had a meeting with Torvan County Borough Council. In all fairness, they were willing to accommodate us, you know, in a meeting for both sites. So there was one meeting, I believe, about a week and a half ago on the Circusfield site, and about 3 or 4 days later, a second one on the Llanfrechta site. Unfortunately, they weren't particularly forthcoming. They didn't, in my opinion, or according to a lot of other people, listen to our needs, Gavin. And I think that, you know, if people really want, you know, to be saying that they're being transparent and that everything's being taken seriously, they need to listen to people's concerns. And at the moment, everything we're doing is not being listened to. We're getting generic responses back. I've personally written to them. I know other politicians, like such as Laura Ann Jones, who's been fantastic, has done so as well. I know that the girls in both groups have made representations to them. Lots of locals have spoken to them and asked questions in the Zoom meetings to them, and that's all we get is the same generic pre-scripted responses, essentially saying that, not in as many words, Gavin, but essentially saying that these are the proposals, everyone else is to blame bar us, we don't fully understand them, they do, we don't fully understand what's happening, they do. And it's this blame culture which I think ultimately we really need to look at and to try and amend, I think.
Okay, so I mean, to be fair, we've covered a lot of stuff, to be fair, in a not far off an hour, actually, to be fair. So we had, I don't know how much of Vitalise Radio you've listened to. I'm not going to embarrass you by asking you that question, so don't worry. But I actually chatted with Anthony Hunt a couple of weeks ago about the building of houses, education provision. How is that going to affect? Because obviously the last couple of years they've been closing schools down, not reopening more, yet there seems to be a lot more people moving into the area. The conversation that we're having is about money, where is our money going? But I'm thinking, actually, if we're bringing more money in or using more money to do this and this, it's got to come from somewhere. So who's going to pay that money? There's a lot of issues here, Griff, that we could chat about all night. Just to let you know, the Anthony Hunt is actually available on our podcast, which is vitalise.org.uk/podcasts. It might be worth you taking a listen to that. What I would absolutely love is for you to come back and let's chat some more about this. But I'd like to know, really, not now, where we're going to get this money from. You know, how is this going to affect Torvine? Where is this going to end? Because if they take more fields away, are they then going to take some more? What's going to happen? And how do we put these things into priority? Because is money more important than people's mental health?
Absolutely, and I think, just, you know, it's really important also for the council. It's a point I'd like to make. You know, the council needs to state, you know, whether or not there's the infrastructure which has been proposed. You know, not just in terms of you know, ensuring that, tackling mental health and well-being and promoting that, and also ensuring that we protect our greenfield sites. But, you know, basic issues such as, for example, polluting, pollution and that kind of thing. I mean, and sewage. I mean, are we being given the guarantees by the council, the infrastructure proposed, you know, it is not going to actually increase the likelihood of sewage to be running down or polluting our streets, which, you know, for example, happens in Cwmbran, for example. And that's the kind of thing which we need to be looking at. You know, have these things been taken into consideration? You know, I think we've, in all fairness, Gavin, and I think many other people across both groups have made this point tirelessly, and it's that we don't seem to be getting an answer on mental health, well, that's been protected. You know, pollution, infrastructure, housing, transport. I mean, if people were able to give us a transparent answer, I think we'd understand, or we might not agree with it, but we'd be able to get somewhere with it. But it seems that if you're not able to give an answer, a straight answer, and if you seem to be concealing things from the public eye by not being necessarily by publishing all the infrastructure, not actually letting people know what's going on, keeping things behind closed doors per se, then ultimately people will be suspicious, you know?
So, okay, so I have a new job, that's not a secret, and in my new job, transparency is so important, okay?
Yeah.
But, so my question is then, who needs to answer these questions?
I think, I mean, ultimately, the whole thing comes down to Togarang County Borough Council. And we need...
So, the suggestion there would be that Anthony Hunt is in charge of the Togarang County Borough Council at the moment?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Sounds like we need to arrange another chit-chat.
That would be fantastic. I'd very much like to come on again at some point and discuss all these things, particularly this Greenfield issue, because, like I said, it's something which we really need to tackle head on and ensure that, you know, people are getting their fair share and, you know, correct answers and the truth comes out, because otherwise it just becomes a very murky process where nobody's aware of what's going on. And like I said, we can talk about it, as you rightly say, for hours here and speculate, but what we need now is for someone to listen to this. Hopefully someone is listening to this. Someone has been listening to the, you know, to the Zoom meetings with both for both sides with the council. The people have been reading the press releases and the letter that I sent to Torvine County Borough Council, and that someone actually takes it upon themselves now to answer and to, you know, to be responsible for what's happened and to ensure there is a transparency, as we both agree is very important now in public life, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think you started it, one of the very first words you said actually when we were chatting was at the beginning was ownership. What a fantastic word to start. And let's leave that as a fantastic word to finish as well. So we're looking for people to take ownership about what's going on within Torvine. Griff, it's been absolutely fantastic to chat with you. I feel that we could chat for hours, but I think we probably need to stop. Sorry about that.
Well, thank you very, very much for having me on, and thank you to all the listeners for taking the time to listen in today. I hope they've enjoyed the chat, and that they've hopefully learned something, or that they've learned a bit more about me, if not my politics. But I'd like to thank you all for taking the time to have me on, and I'd very much like to come on again as soon as possible, really.
No problem. We will definitely sort that out. Vitalize Radio, bringing Torvine
alive. Gav's Good Uns with Gavin Andrew on Vitalize.